Welcome to the Phoenix Unlimited Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to a new episode of the Phoenix MMA podcast. Hope you're enjoying your Friday. It's a nice sunny Friday here in Tennessee. Whatever day you're listening to this on, hopefully you're having a nice day and hopefully it's nice weather. And really thankful because we're not dealing with either tornadoes or flooding. And that's been what we've had pretty consistently recently. This episode is going to be on a couple different topics. First topic is going to be on if you want to compete in a IBJJF tournament. That's the International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation tournament, because it's different than every other type of sports combat competition. It's different than a boxing bout, MMA fight, amateur, pro, wrestling, whether that's high school or college. It's different. Each sport has its unique requirements and variables, and IBJJF is significantly different from MMA competition or wrestling or kickboxing or boxing. So we'll go over that, some of the things that you need if you're interested in competing in IBJJF International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation tournament that you want to prepare for, and how to go about that. We're going to go over the topic of insecurity when it comes to training and when it comes to competition, and also with it relating to ego, as ego's there. So we'll go over that a bit as well. That's just kind of little bonus things. We as topics come up through the gym, throughout training, and just the things that I observe and I see with all our students and our fighters, and new students, old students, teachers, instructor, whenever there's good things to bring up, you know, the podcast is a good time to go over it. So that way, you know, I can have 1,000 conversations just one time, just record it and put it out there instead of having the same conversation 50 times in the gym. So, that one, part of the ego and the insecurity is we added a new competition class for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That's for Phoenix MMA. That's Tuesday and Thursday from 12 to 1:30 p.m. It's a competition. It's a faster paced class. You have more freedom in the class, but believe it or not, a normal Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class is actually pretty low intensity. And that might seem weird if you're a brand new student, because when you're first learning jiu-jitsu, there's so much that you have to learn, and it's so fatiguing and it makes you so sore. But that's just because you're new at it, and because people don't engage in physical combat weekly or daily. And we're lucky that we don't have to do that anymore. And because of that, the body gets really, really sore. The body can adapt really well to the training. It just takes time, but if you haven't done it ever or in years, you get really sore. But believe it or not, a standard Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu class is pretty low intensity. It's more on the teaching side, and you're going to spar and you're going to roll every day in class, but it's still on the lower side of the intensity. We already have on Thursdays, we have our Muay Thai and boxing, our striking competition class, which is sparring. So Thursdays we do hard sparring. Mix of hard sparring and technical sparring if you're not ready for hard sparring yet, or if you have injuries that you need to work around. But we needed that for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so we added a competition class Tuesday and Thursday, 12 to 1:30. And that's going to help bring up that real quick. That class is open for anybody. You could be a white belt. You don't have to have, you could be a zero stripe white belt. You just have to be ready to go at a faster pace, be ready to, be ready to get tapped, because everybody's going to get tapped. I get tapped. Be ready to get really tired, like dog tired, like, you know, laid out on the ground tired. Get ready for your ego to be smashed and ironed out. And also be ready to get way better, like learn way faster at a more accelerated rate. You're it's a faster paced class. You're going to do more active sparring. You're actually going to do more drilling than you do in a normal class. Just cutting out some of the instruction time that makes it go a little bit slower, taking more time, is what's going to happen to the class. But again, you don't have to be a blue belt or purple belt or a pro or an amateur or anything like that to come to that class. You just have to be ready for it. And yeah, so kind of a primer for if you're going to come to that class on it's be a good topic for training and competition and security. So first we'll go with and also I have a funny story too where the Orlando Open a couple weeks ago that I made a rookie mistake, and hopefully everybody can learn from it, and by me telling the story, making fun of myself, I'll remember it and not make this mistake. It had been a bit since I had flown and competed and just made a rookie mistake, so you might not know about this, so it'll be a learning lesson and just a little funny. It's funny how the human body can put on weight. It can put on weight really, really easy when you're on a really clean diet and you're low calorie and you fly. So first thing with IBJJF tournament, so let's just go over what you want to do to get ready. So the first thing you're going to have to do is you're going to have to get an IBJJF registration card. So you'll have to get a card. So you'll have to go to the IBJJF website. You're going to have to submit a form. You'll have to make a profile. When you make that profile, it'll have all the instructions that you need to do. But those instructions are, you're going to have a passport photo. It's similar to, it's actually harder to get an IBJJF card than to get a driver's license, or at least renew your license. The first time you get it, you have to take a test, but it's easier to renew your driver's license than to get an IBJJF certification card. So there's just more steps. You're going to have to get a passport style photo that you'll have to submit. You'll have to submit some type of identification, maybe a driver's license, something to that effect, some type of ID. You'll have to have your professor sign off on your rank, on your belt rank and your experience level. And then you'll have to have the head of your affiliation also sign off on that. So for Phoenix MMA, I'm the head instructor, so I would sign off and submit that to then the lead of our global team is called Zenith. So I would send that to Robert Drysdale in Vegas, and then he signs off on that. You also, if you want to get deeper with it, you can make your membership go higher, where you can add a CPR course to it, and they do a background check, things like that. You don't have to do the CPR course and the background check to have a basic competitor card, but the competitor card you have to renew every year. Another example, a driver's license, you don't have to renew every year, but. So step one, you have to get a membership. You have to get a registration card. And make a profile, and that takes time because you have to submit it. First, you have to get the information, then you have to submit the information. They have to process it. I have to send it to the Zenith management, and then Robert has to sign off on it, and then send it to the IBJJF. They then have to take all that information, process it, submit it. They mail you your card in the mail. So first thing is that if you want to do an IBJJF tournament, then you're going to have to plan for it in the future. Okay, so you're going to have to plan ahead. It's not like a local tournament that you can sign up a week out or sign up the day of or day before. You want to put it on your calendar, and you got to schedule it out. Make your profile and you want to submit all your information and get your membership first. Okay. Next thing with it, with registration for an IBJJF tournament, especially it's always this way because they always have, size requirements where the divisions, they only allow so many people to compete and they can get full. Even pre-COVID, this was the case, but now with COVID, the divisions, they're much more strict on the size of competitors. and with spectators, they don't allow spectators. Each competitor is allowed to have one coach go with them, or it can be a spouse or a friend. You can have one plus one, but there's no spectators allowed. Normally there are, but under COVID, there's no spectators. You can have a plus one. They're really strict on the COVID precautions as well for competition, so you have that added element to it. But you have to register Right now, if you want to register for an IBJJF tournament, you basically have to register the day that the registration opens up. And that means that you have to check the IBJJF website every single day for when a tournament arrives. They'll give you a little teaser. They'll say, hey, this one, they'll say, you know, there's one in Memphis coming up, and they'll put the date out, and you can look at the calendar on the website, and it'll say registration opens soon. But they don't tell you when the registration opens, so you have to check it every single day. The registrations fill up in less than 24 hours because the supply and demand, there's so little slots for everybody. Everybody in the world wants to compete in these tournaments, and there's not a lot of slots, so they fill up quickly. So you have to check. So once you get your membership, then you have to look at tournaments. You have to look at tournaments several months out, 2, 3, 4 months out, and you have to check the website every day if you want to be able to register for a certain tournament. So that's the next one. You have to plan ahead. You have to be mature. You have to be an adult. Even if you're not an adult yet, you have to be mature. You have to be on it. This is going to be a side rant. This is one thing that MMA fighters are probably the ones that have the hardest time with this on the maturity scale. Is lots of times MMA fighters think that it's their coach's job to set up their membership or let them know all the tournaments that are going on or all the events. The coach is preparing you and is going to coach you in the event and is also bringing attention to you for events and things like that. But MMA fighters, for whatever reason, generally want their hand held. It happens all the time. I look back on it now, it's one of the reasons why I think my coaches helped me out so much or liked me as an athlete and a student, is because at 16 years old, even for a local tournament, say in Naga, my coach didn't ever had to tell me the rules. I would go on the website and I would read the rules from start to finish, and I would understand the rules for the tournament. And every single tournament, I would read the rules because every tournament's slightly different. My coach didn't have to tell me the weight classes. I actually probably knew the rules and the weight classes better than my coach. Now, from the coaching perspective, I understand, because if you're trying to run an entire gym and you have so many tournaments coming up, you're trying to compete yourself, and you have a balance of kickboxing fights, wrestling season going on, boxing, MMA, jiu-jitsu, you have so many things going around. There's so many different rule sets. Now I can really understand why my coaches liked me as an athlete and a student. And I just figured it was, you know, I mean, I learned this from wrestling at a really young age, like 14 years old. It's your responsibility to understand. But I also thought that even younger than that, you know, if you're going to play a board game, you read the instructions and understand what the board game is. You look at it and then back in the day, if you didn't understand something about the rules, or if you wanted to get better, you would then go to the library or go to a bookstore and you would read. You would do research because you wanted to get better at it. And now it's so much easier because everybody has we have all of the collective intelligence and knowledge of humanity in our pocket. But we use it just to play games and just waste time or argue on social media platforms. But we have so much information in our pocket. You know, you would have had to been royalty at any other time in history to have a library with 1% of the information that we have in our pocket now. We don't use it. So anyway, MMA fighters tend to have this more, want the hand held more. But you got to adopt the personal responsibility to do well in combat sports, and not only to do well, but also to remain healthy, because it's not basketball, it's not soccer. The point is to slam you on the mat and try to knock you out or choke you or armbar you or kick you in the head. All these are the goal. It's not to, you know, not to put a ball in a basket. The point of the sport is physical violence. So The higher the stakes, the more you should probably prepare and understand what's going on. The lower the stakes, the, you know, if you're just playing a video game and you're just playing a video game on the weekends on your off days of work, you're not doing anything, it's some downtime, then who really cares? You can, you know, you can just casually do it. You know, because it doesn't matter. You just hit the reset button when it comes to somebody punching you in your face. There's not a reset button on that. It hurts. So definitely personal responsibility you're gonna have to get, and you're gonna have to be on top of it because these tournaments they fill up quick, and the registration you're gonna have to do the work. You have to submit all the information. Like I can't even do it for you, even if I wanted to or had the time to. You'll have to do it yourself. Same thing. Side note: if you're an MMA fighter, like you're gonna have to schedule your blood work. You're gonna have to schedule the time off work. You're gonna have to submit the time off request and do all the things that you have to do in your life. So we want to learn that now. Whatever age you are, you could be 15 years old, 16 years old, listening to this podcast. Making weight, your diet, that is your responsibility. Your coach will help out and give you tips, but it's your responsibility. Nobody else's, for you to make weight. And you have to, this is going to be part of the story that I tell about this, but you have to make a commitment that it's a commitment that to your word, that if you say you're going to make weight, you're going to make weight. There is no option. That like failure is not an option. You have to refuse. When you agree to make weight, and this is one of the benefits of combat sports, when you agree to do these things, it's going to be difficult. Hurdles are going to come your way. There's going to be food and distractions and things that are going to pop up the second that you commit to it. And it is, like I said, it's going to be difficult, but you have to make a commitment that there is no failure. Whatever you have to do, you're going to do it. And that's going to make you more successful in combat sports. And then if you choose to not be a professional, you're just doing this as fun for self-defense or as a hobby, these are going to be values that are going to help you, that you're going to gain from combat sports and martial arts that you can take to your professional life and your personal life. So next thing, okay, we got registration, we got making a profile, so now we're going to have to choose a weight class, okay? This is the part, this is one part that's unique from other combat sports for IBJJF competition, and just so you know, the IBJJF is the International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation. It's the Olympics of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. The only tournament that could be in a higher level difficulty would be ADCC, Abu Dhabi Combat Club, but it's not technically a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournament. It's a submission grappling tournament. Most of the people who win are Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belts and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners, but it's technically not a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu tournament. It's a submission grappling tournament. They don't follow the IBJJF Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation rules when it comes to points, things like that. So there are differences, and that's specific. If you're having a wrestling match, not just a wrestling match, are you having a freestyle wrestling match, or are you having a folk style wrestling match? Big difference when it comes to competition, what the rule set is. So with these tournaments, the weigh-in is. The part that's unique is that they have gi competition and no gi competition. You weigh in your uniform, so in your gi or in your shorts and your rash guard, you weigh in, that is, you have to factor that into the weight. So my weight class is with gi division is 154.6. That's with the gi on, that's with the belt on. So you want to buy a lightweight gi. The one I like is the Vulcan. Vulcan makes the lightest, most quality gi that I've ever found. I wear it for competition. It's a super light gi, but it'll still hold up and not shred apart on you. And then a belt as well. There's different belts that you can get that are thinner. They still are strict. They can disqualify you if you buy, like, say, a karate or taekwondo belt, a super thin belt, and you try to wear that, they can disqualify you. And you have to still get a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gi. That's why I'm suggesting Vulcan, because it's IBJJF approved, because they have we'll get to that in just a little bit. So you have to make weight with your uniform on, and the thing is, when you make weight, it's not like a wrestling match where you make weight and you have an hour, 2, 3 hours. You have a few hours or a couple hours before you compete. And it's not like a MMA fight where you weigh in, you have 24 hours, and then you compete. For IBJJF tournaments, you weigh in, you step on the scale, and then you are competing 45 seconds later. You step on the scale, and then you step straight on the mat. So what that means is you can't cut water weight, basically. If you cut water weight, you're going to dehydrate yourself, and your performance is going to go down. You're going to lose. So in wrestling, you can cut water weight. In MMA, you can cut water weight. In IBJJF tournaments, it's not a good practice to cut water weight. You're going to dehydrate yourself. And you might say, well, I could, you know, like wrestling, like for TSSAA, I think they require 45 minutes or an hour in between each match. IBJJF is not like, there is no guaranteed time in between matches. Lots of times you're going to have a match, and then you're going to have a match 15 minutes later, then you're going to have a match 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later. So the matches are pretty quick. It's match, 15 minutes, another match. So even if you're thinking you could cut weight, have your first match, win, and then rehydrate, you know, after that, it's not going to work, because it takes about 15 minutes, maybe 12 to 16 minutes, for if you drink a drop of water for it to actually affect your body or hit your bloodstream effectively. So you're not going to have time to hydrate. So what that means is you have to be just your pure weight. You have to be basically as low body fat as you can be. That's still in a healthy, optimal range. If you get super low, like, you know, 2-3%, for males, your testosterone levels are going to drop down. So you can get too low body fat. But basically, you have to eliminate body fat, and you have to also get a diet that you can, that your body will run very well on things that are not very, very heavy, because you need that. Most of your weight is going to come from hydration. So the morning of competition, most of the weight that you need for breakfast is actually hydration, because fluid is more heavy. It's more heavy than food's going to be. So you need calorie dense foods. Like I like banana, avocado, peanut butter, stuff like that. It's calorie dense, and it's not the heaviest thing in the world. And you need stuff that you can digest and process well. You need a combination of both carbs and fat, so you're hitting the two different energy systems, because you're going to have, match. And you're going to get to the tournament several hours before you actually compete. So anyway, you have to weigh in with your uniform on, you make weight, and then you're stepping on a scale and you're competing. So now, first thing, so that's what you got to understand about the weight class, the unique thing about the IBJJF. Okay. The next thing to do right before, like, so we'll say we'll do a rundown. So you walk into the arena with the COVID precautions right now. They're going to check symptoms, check temperature. You go through, depending on the venue, might be metal detectors, things like that, security. You're going to go through. Then you're going to have to identify. You're going to have to find out what match you're going to be on. They have good software where they have the mats, and they have them scheduled, so you can see it. They're pretty good at that. So you want to find out what match you're going to be at. You want to put all your food, all of the stuff that you brought, you want to have in a good spot. You want to start your warm up about 45 minutes to an hour out before your first match, so that you're nice and warm and you're ready to go for your first match. And I'd say 45 minutes to an hour, because sometimes the match times speed up. You know, it might be projected that you're going to go at 1 p.m., but stuff happens. People get disqualified or injured, or people get submitted really quick. And instead of that 1 p.m., you start at 12:40. So you got 20 minutes of warm-up time that got cut out. And if you're going into matches cold, then you're doing it wrong. You want to go into matches hot. You want to do about a 30-45 minute warm-up, so that you go into your first match with a sweat. Your first sweat's already broken, and you are ready to walk into that first match at a sprinting pace. If you're warming up in your first match, you are going to be slow, you're going to be flat-footed, and you're going to hit a crash. You're going to hit a huge adrenaline burst crash, and you're flat-footed and slow, so you're probably going to – it's going to be harder for you to win. You got a higher chance of losing because you're not – your engine's not warm, you're not revved up yet. So you're going to get there, find your mat, then you'll go – there's always a check scale, so you can check your weight on the scale. They're really nice scales. You want to check your weight on the scale, and then And once your division is ready, there's a bullpen area. So you're going to walk up. They'll, for gi, well, and no gi, they're going to check your uniform. So they have a gi checker that they have a tool that checks your sleeves and your pants and your collars, make sure that it's good to go. So with that, you want to have a backup belt and you want to have a backup gi, because your gi, you might have thrown it in the dryer one time and it shrunk the sleeve a little bit too much. And if you don't have a backup gi and you don't have a friend with a backup gi there, like, you know, again, you can only have a plus one. You need a backup gi, because if not, there's no question. It's, you're disqualified. Just like that, if you don't have a backup gi or a replacement belt, you know, or you have to ask somebody, hey, can I borrow a gi? Can I borrow a belt? And that's not a good plan. Also, you want to always check your weight on their weight scale, because your scale might be a pound heavier than theirs or a pound lighter. You know, maybe you can do a last minute. If you get there early, say you get there a couple hours before you compete, then you have time to use the bathroom. And if you really had to, you could sweat out, you know, half a pound or a pound if your scale was off. But you check weight on their scale. And I like to actually show up to the venue with like maybe a half a pound or a pound, so that way I can grab my calories, my food, and my water, whatever I'm going to drink, and I'll step on the scale with it, and I'll see, hey, can I drink this entire watermelon juice or coconut water or Gatorade, whatever it is, because I want to still be able to drink leading up to the match. So you can do that, check, see how your weight's going to go. Confirm your weight on their scale first. Then you're going to go, when your division's coming up, you're going to go to the gi checker at the bullpen. They'll check your gi. You then go into the bullpen. And when you go into the bullpen, you can't leave the bullpen. So if you leave, you can get disqualified. So you need to take everything that you need with you. Like, you know, if you want something to drink, bring it with you, because you're in the bullpen. If you leave, they will disqualify you. Actually, the Orlando Open, I got to see one of the reasons why they did that. In the bullpen, there was a young purple belt behind me warming up, and he got his gi, he went in, and then and people will try to do this too. It's name of the game. It's what they do. It's why they're strict. A guy, he was behind me warming up, and he changed the gi that he got certified in, his uniform. He had a duffel bag, and he took that gi off, and he put a new gi on. And luckily, the IBJJF, one of the ring coordinators, caught him do it, and they saw him do it, and they came up, and they said that you weren't certified with that gi. Put your other one on. If you don't, and if we catch you again, you're disqualified right away. So the reason why he was doing that was he was probably putting on a gi that had sleeves that were too short or a collar that was too thick. He was doing something to try to game the system, making it difficult for his opponent to use his gi against him. So that's what he was doing. He got caught. You know, she gave him a warning, but I wouldn't be surprised if another person might have just disqualified him right there, right away. So you have to stay in the bullpen, and don't try to sneak that one. And he knew what he was doing too. He knew exactly what he was doing, that he was trying to get a competitive edge by doing it. Athletes do it all the time, and she caught him. So yeah, you're in the bullpen until you're gonna go. Like I said, you're checking your gi, then you step into the bullpen area, you check your make weight, and then from there you're on the match, you're on the mat with a very short amount of time. And also with why you want to check their scales first, their trial scale, they should be calibrated to match the official weight scales. If there is no second chance on these tournaments making weight, it's not like an MMA fight where, say, MMA weigh-ins, because they're 24 hours before the event, if you miss weight by half a pound, you can go outside and you can put a sauna suit on and you can jump rope and you can sweat out half a pound. This tournament's not that way. There's too many competitors. They're trying to run it efficiently. So if you step in and you miss weight on that scale, that's it. You only got one try. You don't get to do another try. But if you made weight on their trial scale, the good thing, or their tester scale, you would at least be able to say, hey, look, let's go look at the tester scale. I made weight on that. So you would have a good argument. You would have a good debate that, you know, you, the scale that you provided, they're really nice scales too. I think they go 3 decimals past zero. I think the scales cost maybe like $1,500. They're nice weight scales, but they should be calibrated to each other. And if they, and say if their trial scale was run in half or a pound light, you would probably win that debate and argument because you say, hey, it's like I made weight on your scale, but I'm sure that they calibrate the scales to be the same with each other to sync up. So so that's why you always want to check your weight. You don't want to, you basically don't want to assume anything. It's, you're going to get snuck if you do that. So if you assume, hey, I'm on weight, I was weight when I left the hotel, you know, and you forget that you drank half a Gatorade in the car ride, And you could probably get yourself, like you could mentally work yourself into using the bathroom if you know you need to lose, you know, 0.2 pounds. But if you think you're good, you just step onto the scale and then you miss it by 0.2. You would hate that you spent money on hotel, flight, months getting ready for competition and to get disqualified because you missed it by 0.2 of a pound. So the theme on this is you got to take it really serious because it's a serious thing. And really, combat sports, that's the name of the game. That's one of the best things that you're going to learn about it is if you want to compete in combat sports, really, if you want to succeed, it's a high level of self-accountability. The more that you take things, personal responsibility for things, the better you're going to do. And even if, I would suggest, like, even, there are, of course, things that you can't take responsibility for. There are things that you can't control, but if you would start out with the thought of trying to take responsibility for everything, then you'll actually find out the things that you can't control or you don't have influence over. But the funny thing about the ego is that oftentimes people will, without any experience or training or knowledge, their first concept that they think of in their head, their assumption, their thing they come up, they automatically think it's right. And they glue to it. So with that, you can create limitations for yourself where you can say, hey, this technique doesn't work for my body type, or, well, people like me, I just can't do this, or I can't do that. Or, you know, well, you can't control this. You can't do this, you know, it, you know how it goes. All these things are, reaffirming limiting beliefs. And the more that you say them and the more that you think them, you create even more limiting beliefs. It's a vicious cycle. So when you first start with it, adopt as much responsibility as you can, or like Jocko Willink phrases, extreme ownership, and take that first and then try it, you know, make an attempt, and then you'll see what you can do. Because the other thing with responsibility and work ethic is it's just like a muscle or like conditioning and cardio. It grows the more that you do it. Your ability, your workload that you can sustain, your cardio, the amount of weight that you can lift grows over time. It's not stagnant. You're not in a stagnant position. It grows. Now it depreciates. Just the same way it's not in a stagnant position, where you are right now is not the level of your capacity. It's not your peak. It's not all you got. But if you don't do it, you don't stay in that steady state. You don't stay in the same spot. You depreciate. Everything depreciates when it's not managed and it's not when you don't put effort and energy into it. So with that, you wanna take responsibility for everything from making your weight to your diet to your sparring rounds to rest days, making sure that you get good rest days, make sure that you're not getting too many rest days. Not getting too few rest days, all this. And yes, I know it's difficult. Yes, I understand. I do it and I understand it's difficult. But by doing difficult things, it's going to make other things in life seem easier. And when you run into difficulties in your personal life or professional life, you'll be able to look at what you're doing in the gym and what you're doing in competition, and you'll say, oh, this is nothing. This is nothing. I've sweat out 12 pounds before. If I can deliver this on this date, I can get this done in 3 days. You know, I sweat out 12 pounds in 3 hours, you know. So it's definitely about perspective. The less that you do, the less capable you become, and you depreciate, and things are more stressful to you, the less that you do. All right, and so yeah, that's your first little tips on without any technical stuff, just nuts and bolts of an IBJJF tournament if you want to do it, things to expect. Of course, you know, you got to book your flights and your hotel and your rental car or your transportation, all that good stuff. And you got to coordinate with that with everybody. And you got to coordinate it with your family, your personal life. And you got to coordinate it with your work and your job. So you got to request time off. So yeah, there's a lot of, you can't just float. You just can't float in the wind and go win a Pan American or World Championship or National Championship. You have to earn it. But the things that you, because you have to work so hard at it, that's why everybody wants it. It's an amateur competition. But it's so valuable because it's so difficult. And it's truly so valuable because what it forces you to become. If you're immature and you're unorganized and you are lazy and you don't want to work hard and you, and your ego is inflated and you know, you can't deal with setbacks and you decide to quit whenever things get difficult, you're never going to win a world championship. You're never going to win even a local championship. So the process of winning the MMA fight, jiu-jitsu tournament, wrestling tournament, whatever it is, it forces you to become somebody. It forces you to become the things that all of us actually want to be when we think about it in our dreams, or, you know, the things you admire in a movie character or things like that. It forces you. It's an actual practice instead of just words or thinking about it or talking about it. It's an actual practice that gets you to become your better version of yourself, somebody that you're proud of, and it's a lot of fun too. So it's hard work, but it's not all hard work. It's really exciting. It's a lot of fun, and yeah. So hopefully that helps out with some just little tips and things to get ready, some nuts and bolt things. The mistake that I made for the Orlando Open that almost cost me the entire everything, flights, hotel, tournament, and it almost cost me was a stupid one handful of tortilla chips. That was it. One handful of tortilla chips. I think when we landed off the plane from the flight, I was maybe like 2 pounds underweight. So I had a nice, really nice cushion, 2 pounds underweight. And I like that because I was like, that's really exciting because most of the time, most people lose about 1 pound when they sleep. So that meant that I was going to wake up and I'd have 3 pounds of space. So 3 pounds means I get to have a really nice breakfast and I don't have to stress out about the weight, and I'm going to be fully hydrated and have enough calories to go into competition. And not having that stress also means that I'm going to sleep better and get a full 8 hours of sleep or 8 to 9 hours of sleep before the competition. And I can focus on the techniques I want to do. I can focus on what my opponents are going to try to do because I've been studying them. And so I was in a really sweet spot, and then I got too comfortable, and I just got too comfortable, and it caught me slipping. So wanted to drive around and sightsee and look around. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, I'm like 2 pounds underweight. It's like, sweet, this is awesome. You know, we'll go to nothing crazy. Like, we'll go to Chipotle and get a bowl with lettuce, pico, corn, steak, guacamole. For the most part, my diet has been carbs just before, to get ready for this competition, carbs just before training sessions, and just enough carbs to do a workout with. And then everything else has been protein source and fat source. So like, say for dinner, grilled chicken salad with avocado and eggs. That would be like a lunch or a dinner. And for breakfast, I eat a banana, 3 scoops of peanut butter, and a protein shake. And then, so that's my carbs for breakfast for the first training session. And then going back for the night session, I would do like, say, 3 tablespoons of honey. Before the second practice. So just enough carbs for the practice, but otherwise protein and fats as calories. But decided to go there, and then what really got me was the chips. The chips. I hadn't had chips in a long time, and I was thinking, hey, I'm 2 pounds underweight. This is awesome. And at the time, I'd only ate maybe 500 calories, 600 calories at that time. I wasn't eating a lot of food. You know, I don't know, 70% through the day, my day. So all on the tail end of the day left. And I've only had like 500 calories. So, hey, I'm good. And the body, when you're at a really low body fat and you're not eating things like chips, it's like a sponge, and it will cling to any type of bad food you eat or any type of carbs that you eat. And especially if it's salty and the chips are salty, it will cling to it. It'll like a sponge. It'll hold on. So maybe a total of around 700 or 800 calories. So I still put me somewhere about 1300-1400 calories for the day. Still a calorie deficit. Eat that. Oh, sweet. I'm on weight. It's awesome. Everything's going good. A little bit more sightseeing, find the venue, all that good stuff. Get back to the hotel, break out the scale, put the scale down, and I'm about to go to bed, about an hour and a half before going to sleep. Pull the scale out, put my gi on, put my belt on, put the underwear that I'm going to wear for the day of competition on, because different underwear weighs different stuff. That's another thing I'll say, IBJJF, you have to wear underwear. People will not wear underwear as a way to cut weight. And if somebody grabs your pants and they lift your pants and you moon the crowd, that's also an automatic disqualification. So you got to wear underwear. If somebody pulls your underwear down, that just happens. Sometimes people grab the pants doing a guard pass, and that happens sometimes. But as long as you got underwear, you're good. But if you moon the crowd, then you're disqualified on that one. So you got to wear underwear, and you got to get lightweight underwear for the competition. When you're trying to shave off like 0.1 pound or point, you know, yeah, you're trying to. You know, it's like a race car. You're trying to shave off every pound you can, because that's going to be either you can that pound could be a pound of muscle, or that pound could be extra calories or hydration. So you don't want to waste any weight when you're competing. Maybe an hour and a half before going to sleep, I check, pull out the scale, check everything, and I am like 4 pounds overweight. I went from being 2 pounds underweight and gonna wake up being 3 pounds underweight to 4 pounds overweight. And I'm telling you right now, it's like a combination of stress, anxiety, and anger. So mad at myself. And this is like decently late. I can't remember exactly. I put on an Instagram story. Maybe it's 9:30, 10:30. I need to go to sleep because I was competing pretty early in the morning. I think I was competing at 9 a.m. if I can recall. So I needed to go to sleep right then. And I checked my weight. It caught me slipping. I thought that, thought I was on weight. 4 pounds overweight. And so this is the part where you have to make a commitment that no matter what, failure is not an option. Came out. Stephanie was like, "What's wrong?" Because she could tell I was mad. I was really, really mad. I'm 4 pounds overweight. This is really, really bad. This is not good. And I told her, and she was like, "Hey, are you mad at me?" I was like, "No, I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at myself. I did it. It's again personal responsibility. I made the choice to eat what I ate. I made the choice to not just eat a salad, like a chicken salad, before I went to sleep, which is what I've been usually eating for dinner. And it was a stupid, stupid mistake I made. But I made the mistake, so it's my job to fix it. It's my job to fix it and lose the weight." So I went down to the hotel gym, and they had an Aerodyne bike, and I put my Beats on, and I listened to the same song for maybe an hour and a half on repeat, over and over and over. About 15 minutes into it, I wasn't sweating enough, so I didn't bring a sauna suit with me either. So that was also a mistake. I didn't plan on eating chips like an idiot. and gain 4 pounds on a 1,300 calorie diet. So I didn't have a sauna suit. So again, you have to make a commitment to, there's no matter what, you're just not going to lose. Or you're going to make weight. You're going to show up. I'm not going to, if I lose a match, I lose a match, but I'm not going to lose by not making weight. That's unacceptable. So the thing that really stinks about it is about this time is when I need to go to sleep. It's my bedtime, so I can actually get 8.5 hours of sleep. But instead, because I made the mistake, I have to stay up cutting weight on an Aerodyne bike in a hotel gym. So the gym had a trash bag, so luckily that trash bag was empty. I grabbed the trash bag, I ripped some holes in it, I put it on my upper body, so, and then I look for another trash bag. Can't find another trash bag, so I go to the bathroom. Not so lucky on the bathroom. The bathroom, the trash bag did have trash in it. They had 2 trash cans in there, so I took the one trash bag out, put all that trash in the other trash bag, and then I put holes in that, and then I put the dirty trash bag on, and then put my sweat suit on over top of it, and then I got a towel from the gym and wrapped the towel around my neck and put my beanie on, and then put the hoodie up, and just did rage cardio for the next hour to lose, to sweat out the weight. Again, I said cutting water weight is not a smart way to compete in these tournaments, but it just had to be done. So, I lost enough weight so that, I was 1 pound overweight, and, I got lucky when I slept. I slept about a pound and a half off, I think. So I woke up and I had about 0.5 pound. I got about 0.5 pound. It was basically just some watermelon juice, and I got a little bit of peanut butter and a little bit of honey. That was it. Like half a, you know, maybe like 8 ounces of watermelon juice and, like 2 scoops of peanut butter and like 2 mouthfuls of honey. That's all I could have. And the thing that really stank with that is because I was dehydrated going to sleep, my body was cramping. Because I was stressed out and I was mad at myself, I was worried because I finally just had to go to sleep. I was like, I have to go to sleep now. I'll wake up early and sweat off the weight early before I go to the tournament, but I have to go to sleep right now. And also the hotel gym was closing. I tried to jog outside, and it was warm outside, but it wasn't hot enough to get a good sweat going. So it's like, okay, this is it. I got to cut it. Got to go to sleep. And because of the nerves and the stress and the me being mad at myself for the mistake I made, I maybe only slept maybe 4 or 5 hours. So I broke my rule of sleep 8 hours, 9 hours before competition, because I was it, not the stress of actual competing, the stress of missing weight. Even to float off the pound while you sleep, you need to sleep a good 8 hours so your body can process and digest stuff so you lose that pound. But I got lucky. I was running hot. I was sweating while I was sleeping, and I lost about 1.5 pounds. So I went to the tournament still a bit dehydrated, but not feeling terrible. Low calories, but not feeling terrible. And the only thing that made me not feel terrible with that dehydration and the low calories was a mental commitment that no matter what, once you get to that level in the competition, there are going to be obstacles that are going to pop up, this weight, all these things. You have to get the job done. You can't take no for an answer. You have to overcome whatever obstacle it is. And while you do it, you can't complain. If you complain about it, you're going to give it more power. So you have to set it to the side and focus on the task at hand. It doesn't matter if you're dehydrated. It doesn't matter if you have low calories. It doesn't matter if you didn't get any sleep. You have to focus and accomplish the task at hand. And because I did that and did not give, this is also something with other things, like you can't give negative things more energy than it's necessary. There's some stuff you do got to focus on, of course, but a lot of stuff, a lot of negative things, the more that you focus on it, the more power you give it. So this is a great example. If I would have thought about how dehydrated I was and how little calories I had and how little sleep, I maybe would have missed weight. I would have just self-sabotaged, missed weight. Or I'd have said like, well, there's no reason for me to go compete because I'm going to lose because I'm not, like, no, all that. I've won plenty of, I've won MMA fights, kickboxing bouts, and jiu-jitsu tournaments and wrestling tournaments when I was dehydrated, felt like crap, felt sick, felt bad, super high levels of anxiety, stressed out, fear, all of these things. I've won matches. I've won tournaments. I've beat really good people under all of those conditions. So the reason why I knew to not give it energy and just focus on what's going on is because I've performed before. It's your mind is the most important piece. All of those things you need to tell yourself your mind is just a vault. It's an impenetrable force, and it doesn't matter what obstacle is thrown your direction. You're going to overcome because you can. You'll be amazed at what your body can do and what your mind can do as long as you don't give it an easy out. Like I said, I've won a lot of competitions, a lot of fights, feeling terrible, all the worst things ever. And the other thing that's funny is I've lost plenty of matches and fights where I didn't feel those. I actually felt great, like no injuries, feeling good, everything. And then I lost in it. And sometimes I actually think it's a little bit of an advantage to have some type of headache, something where you don't go into the competition like completely smooth. Like, you know, like I think I have a fractured or broken toe. But believe it or not, like taping that thing up, I actually kind of like it. If things are too easy, you relax. I was 2 pounds underweight. That's why I relaxed. I relaxed too much, and that's why I made the mistake. If I was only half a pound underweight, I probably wouldn't have eaten anything at all. And sometimes people used to say that's unhealthy. Hey, you're starving. Now they call it intermittent fasting. It's pretty funny. Or they call it fasting. And now there's all these healthy things about fasting. You know, they used to say getting in a sauna and sweating a whole bunch, unhealthy. Now all the research and the data and the science is out that saunas are super healthy for you. So we can go back to that thing where the ego, people are trying, we'll come up with assumptions when we have no experience or training or expertise in something just because our ego tells us, hey, you came up with the idea, so it's probably right. Anyway, it's pretty funny. But went to the tournament, competed. Was not the outcome that I wanted, but the outcome, what I had in my competition had nothing to do with the weight cut. Of course, had something to do with it, but I didn't lose because of the weight cut, because of the sleep. I lost just on, it was just technical proficiency and competition experience. It had been about a year and a half. I just need more matches. That's all it is. Similar, like Conor McGregor losing to Dustin Poirier, it's impossible to stay at the highest level of competition if you're not competing frequently. You are getting slower and your opponents are getting faster, and a tenth of a second makes the difference at high level competition. So the only way that you get that competition speed is to compete frequently. So got to wrap this up, just about over, but I didn't expect to go as long as I did on these things. I hope you enjoyed it, but I'll wrap it up with the insecurity part. That I was going to say is the competition class. If you're coming to that, just get ready. You're going to get tapped. I'm going to get tapped. Everybody's going to get tapped. I'm putting you in bad positions on purpose. So you're getting put in bad positions and you're tired, and everybody there is highly motivated and athletic. Everybody's trying to become as athletic as possible. They're trying to become as skillful as possible. We're going to tap each other. You're going to get beat. And that's part of the game. And that's also how you learn self-control. Is you learn self-control by getting choked, being held down against your will, being choked, tapping, and then be able to stand up, keep it all together, shake hands, and go again without trying to do something like dirty or backhanded, or like, you know, doing something dirty to get back at your training partner when they just beat you fair and square. And the thing that's going to hold you back from if you come to that class and you don't, it is insecurity and feelings of like worthlessness or, man, I'm just terrible. You really, I'm telling you right now, everybody feels them. I still feel them on occasion. If you have a bad practice, listen to a good song. Just, you got to mentally wash it off. It's all, everybody has good days. Everybody has bad days. Don't let it cause you to not come back to the competition practice. Don't let it cause you to avoid rounds with difficult partners because they're tapping you. Let it instead take that same energy, turn it into a fuel source, and the person who's tapping you, try to get as many rounds of them as possible. the thing that they're tapping you with, try to get in that area as much as possible. Try to defeat if they keep armbarring you or ankle locking you, figure out how to defeat it. Solve the problem. Don't avoid the problem. That's how you become more skillful, more capable, more tough, is you have to solve the problems. You can't solve the problems if you avoid it. Insecurity and the bad feeling of losing is going to cause you, that's going to cause your ego to want to defend itself and say, hey, don't go to that class. You're going to get tired. And when you get tired, you get beat. Don't go with that person over there because they're really good at this. And when you go with them, you get beat. So you're going to avoid those things, and it's going to catch up to you eventually. It's going to catch up to you it's going to catch up to you in a normal class in the gym, because if everybody's progressing and you're staying stagnant, it's going to catch up to you. And it's going to catch, if you ever compete, it's going to catch up to you. On the mat, in the ring, in the cage, there are no lies. Like, you can't fake it. You can't fake it till you make it. It's there. It's the truth. It all comes out. So just advice. And it's also a good practice, even for the highest skill level of people, to be humbled on a frequent occasion. And this is not me saying, hey, like, lose. Like, I'm not saying go ahead and lose. Like, just because if you say that, some people will take it and be like, well, you know, it doesn't matter if you lose. Like, just go ahead, and they'll use that as a reason to not try that hard when things get tough. Like, okay, I'll just go ahead and give up. Try your best to win. Be as competitive as possible. Do your best you can. And if you lose, it's okay. That's how you learn. That's how you grow. That's how you get better. Don't lose easily. Don't just give up easily. Lots of times people will do that also as an ego protection mechanism, because they'll say, well, if I would have gave it my all, they wouldn't be able to beat me. That's, you know, I was holding back. I gave up easy. Or, you know, I gave up. All these examples. It's okay. It's okay. Like, nobody likes to lose. It stings for everybody. It's okay. Take that feeling. It's a bad feeling. I think the fact that it's bad, lots of bad feelings will motivate us more than good feelings sometimes. So, like, losing a match will cause you to train harder than ever. You win that very same match, and you might cut back on your focus about 10% because you're already doing well enough. So you need both. You need positive reinforcement and teaching, and you also need the negative reinforcement and teaching. And the negatives are losing in the gym and, you know, losing in tournaments, things like that. They are you don't want to lose, but when you lose, treat it as an exposure of something that you need to work on, something that you need to improve. So, hope that helped. And also understand, everybody loses if that makes you feel any better. Like, everybody eventually loses because it's very difficult. The champions, the medal podium, it cycles. Like, every 5 years, there's new champions. Every few years, there's new champions, because everybody's competing to win, and it's very hard to get to the top. It's even harder to stay on top. And also, sometimes the best person doesn't win. It's who's best that day. Anyway, I'm ranting on the same thing. Whole thing is, put your best effort in. Don't let your ego and insecurity make you avoid hard training partners and hard training sessions. And stay true to your diet. Don't make the rookie mistake that I made. Sorry, I didn't bring it up earlier. When you're on a flight, when you fly, it causes water retention. That's the reason why I put on 4 pounds with just a little bit of chips. I forgot to mention that earlier. Yeah, flying causes water retention. I mean, if you have a flight, you'll notice, if you look at your ankles and feet, most people can notice it pretty easy there, that they'll be puffy. But so if you eat any type of carbs or salty stuff, you're really gonna bloat and put on a lot of weight. So that's the part I missed out on. And like, if you're doing an international flight, lots of people gain weight with the flight, like during the flight. It could be weigh 150 getting on the plane and weigh 153 or 152 getting off the plane if it's a really long flight. like across the globe. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. And luckily, Holland stayed asleep the whole time. She's taking a nap in my lap. So co-host Holland helped out. And yeah, hopefully you liked this episode. And see everybody tomorrow at the gym. And if you're not coming for open gym Saturday, Sunday, then see you on Monday. See you.